thank you for coming, giving us your beautiful sunny day out there, or maybe you're coming in for refuge from the, from the warmth out there. So, oops, I'm gonna get rid of one.
Coming here to hear you, Mark.
Oh, wow. Well, I am honored. This is fun because this.
What?
Another one came.
Another one, just ignore it.
Should I just ignore it? Probably had more.
You're not gonna.
It's knowing I'm paying attention now, so it says, oh, I'm.
Just leave it, leave it, it's not gonna help.
Okay. Anyway, this is, this research I haven't presented all that much because it's brand new. And it's been really fun because it was, as I said earlier, we knew the parents thought they'd done a pretty good deal, you know, they were happy with their choice, but you're always wondering, well, what do the kids think, you know? Catch them a decade or more later and say, what's the scoop? Give me the nitty gritty, would you do this over again? And so, in a way, that's a little bit what this study's about. It was presented at a Screen Time Summit in Boston last November as a poster session. The poster that I'm handing around there is what we whipped up to get off as kind of the preliminary results. And then this last March, it was down at California Parks and Recreation Society, kind of an interesting group to be presenting this at. They were very, very interested. And then it's a continuing study. So it's kind of like the pilot that we pushed off here with these kids. So the PowerPoint, as I did Monday, I'll just kind of whip through it, show you some facts and statistics, and then I want to hear your comments, because I've had some fantastic conversations this week with many of you who could offer insight to a whole bunch of the rest of us. So hopefully we'll have good time for that. So here we go. These three first little slides are, you know, there's tons of literature out there that's telling you all about the screen time of kids today. This is actually the 8 to 10 year old group. And this is literature developed usually through the Center for Disease Control, CDC, or University of Washington. Nutrition is a big one. There's a commercialfreechildhood.org, which is a fantastic website. But they're telling us basically that children 8 to 10 spend about 6 hours a day, four of which are television. Youth 11 to 14 spend about 9 hours a day, five of which are television. Kids 15 to 18 are about 7.5 hours a day, which is four and a half are television. So, you know, you're getting this all over the place. We just know there's a lot of hours being devoted to screens. And I should read this pretty good. The issue of screen time is as volatile as ever. Stories on tech addictions, I don't know if you've heard about this yet, showing up in news magazines. Smartphones, tablets, laptops, iPads added to the screen mix, reshaping how we work, communicate, and spend our free time. And hours viewing TV have not dropped one bit. So we just know that too many hours seem to be spent with screens for the average American. In fact, there is an internet use disorder is now listed in the appendix of the Diagnostic Manual of Mental Disorders.
You know, I wonder how that dovetails with people that are always iPodding around, too. They're just disconnected because they're wearing their earphones and they turn you out.
Very, very true.
It's like a whole other element.
Yeah. So this is the poster presentation I'm going to spend a little time on today. If you want to, I know you can't read it from here, don't worry. But that was what we decided to. Dr. Carrie Schwab was a wonderful young lady who's, I'm kind of trying to pass the baton because I'm really tired of doing this stuff. Like, you know, it's a very interesting topic and I love to talk about with people, but you know, been there, done that. I like to jumpstart things and get them moving. So she's a real mover and a shaker and is probably going to take this to a whole new level for the TV-free kids. So this unusual study shed light on youth who are challenging the norm by getting off the treadmill, choosing to dramatically limit their screen time, a choice which they found out was very simple, very manageable, and yet very compelling. And I heard one person claim that if we could bottle the idea of just turning the screens off into a pill, it would be, you know, people miles and lined up to take this pill. But it's just, it's almost too simple. Sometimes the solutions in life are so simple they don't seem like they could be possible. The purpose of this research was to generate follow-up data to the 2001 TV-free family study, which I presented on Monday. So the children of these families were asked about their lives now and their reflections on growing up without television. Participants were from 22 states. And here are two things that kind of came out, and I love it that Carrie Schwab, my co-writer on this, is a great philosopher and comes from a little bit different background as me. And she, as she was reading the results and the observations from the kids, she said two things really bubbled to the top. And the first was agency. You know, when you have, I think of choice, when you have agency. And she said, you know, the agency official definition, a contributor to life circumstances, not just the product of them. So in my, you know, interpretation is they made proactive choices. They were often the first one to make some kind of a choice. And then kids would follow along, for example, as early childhood. And the second thing was creation, where, again, the definition to put parts together to make something, well, they had a ton of activities and hobbies, and that was just off the charts for comparison to the norm. And then I'm going to have quite a few quotes in here from the kids. And remember, they're about ages 18 to 28. We didn't change anything about the quotes, but one quote was, "At this point in my life, the trail goes where I make it go, or perhaps where I let it run." And again, you've got this idea of really a freedom out there of what to do, rather than somebody telling us what to do, or perhaps ads telling us how to be.
These 50, what percentage of the potential children that you could have had in the study?
They were all from the study.
I know, but I think there were more than that that actually went through this as kids, more than 50.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, good point, because there were 1,500 people in the study 12 years ago, and this was email and snail mail, and the survey was online, a Perseus Survey Solution, but how many have their same emails after 12 years? And I kind of decided as a swan song to see if I could find these kids.
Right.
So first I had to find the families, and then see if the families would ask their kids to contact me. And I didn't know if I'd get half a dozen people. So I think when Carrie takes it over, we'll probably have some other criteria for finding a bigger population. But what's interesting is these kids actually remembered that study, and you know, a lot of them were participants there. But there were definitely more kids in the original study than these 50.
Probably a couple thousand, maybe, huh?
Possibly, yeah. You know, if you think 2-3 kids per household, so yeah. Well, here were some things. I just pulled out some statistics I thought you guys would be interested in, and know that I can give you kind of ballpark comparisons to the national norm, or but it's not so much in here. But the current television habits for these kids today, 60% still watch no TV, 18% watch 30 minutes or less per day. So, you know, approximately 78%, you could say, watch 30 minutes or less a day. Prevalence of hobbies, 36% of the kids spent 1 to 2 hours, and 31% over 2 hours on hobbies a day. So, you know, that's again, we got, you know, 67% spending at least an hour on some kind of a hobby per day. And time spent reading was huge compared to the national norm. So that was, again, 64% reading at least 30 minutes a day. So, a few of these things, and I'll read you a few others. As I was, Nancy and I were talking, and I was looking over some of the other stats I didn't put in here, and I thought, oh man, that's kind of interesting too. So I'll read you a few others in a minute or two. Physical activity of TV-free kids. You can see the combination there. We got 73% get at least 30 minutes daily. Time spent outside was very big compared to the national norm. So you can see over half, at least then a half an hour outside. There is a sobering statistic I mentioned Monday that today's children's 90% of their time spent indoors now. So along with that in mind, they say, you know, if they don't know anything about certain beautiful spaces, they're not certainly not going to protect them. So to me, that's the biggest thing we need to remember is things might be good right now, but when they pass over the controls in 20, 30, 40 years, if kids don't have experiences like Holden or experiences, you know, sitting by a waterfall or seeing something beautiful, they're not going to have a clue of why they should protect it. And then it did. There were a few questions on obesity. Of course, that's always, you know, you got to try to weave in a BMI sampling or something in all these tests. And what, 13% were more than 10 pounds overweight. So in other words, almost 90% did not have that issue at all. Thoughtful expressions from TB-free kids. So here's the big question. If you could live your childhood again, would you want it TB-free? And 87% said yes. Will you raise your children TB-free? 63% said yes. And of course, back to the parents, we knew they were pretty big proponents of this years ago. If they could do life over, would the parents of TB-free youth raise their children without TB again? And actually 100% of the respondents on this survey said they would.
You know, part of that is that you tend to repeat what you experience. Because almost every person I ever met that was in the service said, "Oh, everybody should be in the service,"
right.
You know, and those that weren't in the service presented it much different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even like the reason that people turned off TV, sometimes it was a repetition of what they grew up with. About a quarter of the study, as I mentioned Monday, grew up without TV and thought that was a good idea. About a quarter grew up with too much TV. Do you remember the story about the kid that came home and her dad caught the 5:32 subway, had two martinis and 2 hours of TV before he would speak to anyone? You know, she hated TV. It stole her parents. Fourth of them, it was something that went wrong. The reason, you know, the ice storm, hurricane, the power went out for 2 weeks, and they went, "Wow, we're talking, we're having candles, we're having fun." You know, kids love that kind of stuff. And when parents learn it's not as bad as they thought it would be, then they'll come on board. And then about a fourth just kind of fell into it. But so you're right. You know, sometimes people definitely repeat. This was interesting. TB-free young adults were asked if they had any advice for parents currently raising children. This advice centered on three areas: love, limits, and learning. And I just have a few quotes of each one. And feel free to chime in if you have anything to share. I mean, many of you, I'm sure, have shared similar experiences. So here was advice to parents on love. Quotes from TB-free young adults. "Stop talking on the phone. Listen to your children. Enjoy spending time with them. Let them know their value. Pay attention to your kids and love them." I mean, these are just, you know, straight out of obvious, makes sense to everybody here, I'm sure. But I do know there's a sobering commercial I saw, or an ad I saw once, and it was a new advertising a new headset phone, and it showed a brand new baby in a mom's arms. And she had the little phone, and she's just talking away on the phone, holding her baby. It was supposed to be really positive, saying, "Look, you can do two things at once." Mm. And along that same note, a friend of mine knew about some research where they plugged the little brand new babies, had little electrodes all over their head to sense stimulation and things going on in the brain, and they showed a fantastic high-definition flat-screen TV with the mother's face right there, and they held the baby literally inches from the screen, just as real as they could get. You know, this is real life in your living room, and the baby's, you know, the electrodes were absolutely flat. And then, of course, they changed it to the mother doing it, and they were just all over the board. So that's kind of interesting, thinking. Well, I'll tell you a few statistics in a minute, that over half of Americans think that Baby Einstein and all the newborn type of shows are doing some good, and research shows they're absolutely not doing a thing. They might not be harming them, but you have to say what's not happening when the kid's in front of it too. Yeah.
I think the very first quote, there was a person that was on Holden's staff not that long ago, actually outside staff,
And her request from her son or daughter, I can't remember, was for her birthday present, was for the mom to put the phone away for the day. That was the birthday request. And sort of like, wow, they get it. I mean, the kids are feeling it.
The kids get it, yeah.
Feeling the lack of attention.
That's pretty powerful. One of my areas was on 30 Days Live. I'll mention it tomorrow, but it was 10-year-olds going off screens for a month with their class. Ended up being really fantastic. But the kids were asking me one day, like, what's okay? You know, can I take pictures? Of course you can take pictures. You know, can I make movies? Yes, you can make movies, you know. And one little kid raises his hand, he says, can I watch my dad play video games? I did not. It was the first question in all these years of research. I was just slammed. I did not know how this. But I know the highest demographic for gaming for men is 29-year-old males, and I thought, can I watch my dad play video games?
But yeah, just to come up,
yeah.
Are there that many people that talk on the phone anymore? I mean, my sense is people have phones now for the sake of texting.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
A phone is not a talking device anymore. Yeah. We just text our way through life.
And even think about the difference, even in 2 years, you know, what a difference that is. You're very right, because people, that's the weird thing. They're not talking, they're just looking.
Well, I think people are talking. You see somebody walking down a park. Or jogging or something.
I don't know, jogging.
And they're talking. They're talking to whoever's plugged into them.
True.
Because it's inconvenient for them to text at that point, so they're just...
makes the hour look like it's full of crazy people. Everyone's talking to themselves.
Well, I think a lot of them are not talking necessarily because, like my stepson, he says, don't call me, text.
Yeah.
He does not want a phone call whatsoever. He wants everything done via text. So the younger they are, I think the more it is now texting.
Yeah.
They don't even really like email that much.
That's right. Yeah, email's definitely going out.
Well, because if you emailed like you text, you would look like, a 2-year-old. You know, when you email, you actually need like prepositional phrases and structure.
Punctuation.
You know.
That's so true.
So I hate not real words written down.
Yeah.
Because there's a real word for that.
No. And because of what you're saying, we think, some communication is better than nothing, isn't it? I mean, texting, it's a big...
I don't know.
Let's do these three and come back to it, because I want to get into some conversation about Poland and what you guys feel, some of the ideas coming up in the future. Here was another one on limits. Let your kids know you are the parent first and foremost. If you say no, mean it. Don't let your kids get away with everything. Have some standards they can stick by. Parents still need to be in charge and know what's going on. And I like this one. When I think about TV, I start with the thought that it's such a time suck. There are only so many hours in a day. Why train your kids to waste any of them? And then we'll go to learning, the last one here. Find creative things to do that don't require any batteries to keep your kids occupied. They should be encouraged to discover their environment, to participate actively in that environment. If your child disagrees with you, hear them out and then calmly and rationally explain to them why they are wrong, if they are. And then have the books everywhere. We used to call it the sprinkle method. Kids get so bored they read anything. So have some good books just hanging around and laying around and they'll probably read those. And then here's a few I just wanted to share with you. This one was a question addressing standards of beauty. And what do you think makes a person most attractive? Check all that apply. And it was fitness, shape, size, personality, intelligence, health, and other. And both personality and intelligence were in the 91%. Shape, fitness, health were all around the 50%. So just kind of food for thought.
This one was on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being extremely unhappy and 10 being extremely happy, where would you put yourself today? And 75% of these kids ranked an 8 or higher. And I do know in a national statistic, we reached our highest level of satisfaction as a society in 1957, and it's been steadily dropping ever since. Sad. And another one here, if on a scale of 1 to 10, if experiences were 1 and material possessions were 10, where would you like to be based on your priorities? And I haven't even ranked all these out yet, but there's 80% had a 1, 2, or 3, so experiences were definitely. And then I think the last, or there's two more. How would you rank your overall satisfaction with life? Very satisfied were 67.4%, somewhat satisfied 30%, not very satisfied 2%. And I think the last one, yeah, is do you continue to limit your TV today? And actually 91% do limit it, even if they still watch somewhat, they limit it. Oh, here's one last one. If you are in a relationship, do you feel it is stronger because of the lack of TV in your home? And 50% said yes, 40% weren't sure. So just a few others, lots of little stuff out there. I had to put this in because, you know, when we're up here, we kind of miss our kids. So I told my husband I'd only spend a minute. But here's a little proof a couple of TV-free kids can not only survive but thrive when you help them get off the treadmill. And again, this, you know, a lot of you have done it. We might be able to even do it even more or even better. But people tend to need a boost. Most people, if you just ask, oh, shut it off or put it away a while, you know, it's hard. It's very hard. But if you challenge them, if you make some kind of a quest, you know, do something together, journal about it, make observations, how did you handle your withdrawal, you know, turn it into a game like that, it can be a lot of fun. This was an example of our daughter who's now 21, but her entertainment was fishing off the back of the couch with her dad's tie. And yeah, I would not show this to just every group, but you guys probably very much understand. And this was, our son was into the Zorro stage, so he made this hat, and then he said he could stand by the bird feeder until a bird landed on his head with the bird seat up there. So that's a bird on his head. He's 25 now. And anyway, here's just a few. They've grown up without it, and they're pretty screen savvy. You know, they've got all the Facebook things, but I know... And they try to keep up, you know, a few minutes of YouTube or things where they can keep up with the news. But Sydney's a senior in college. Those are her pictures over there. And Adam's a musician in Portland. He went to school in jazz studies in Portland. Now he's a 25-year-old musician in Portland. So it's pretty fun. And, you know, the agency and the creation that I saw in the other TV-free kids, really, I can just go, yep. And it's not like they're going to be these, it's not like, you know, they're reaching some new level or they're really great or better than anybody at all. It's just they've kind of had this broader base that I'm sure many of your kids have where they've pulled their ideas from. It's not always doing one particular thing. So what are your thoughts about, I want to say, children and screens in general? And then I just thought we've got plenty of time to talk a little bit about where do you see the future of Holden Village? I know from the first 2 hours I was here, I had a couple board members really pull me aside, and we talked a lot about issues, and wow, it's got some very interesting decisions to make coming up. So I thought if you wanted to have that conversation now, that'd be great. So the only slide I have left is telling you a little bit about tomorrow, which I hope you all come back for that. There's... a few challenges, a little bit more about the benefits of limiting TV. I'm never going to be a kill your TV person at all. It's a wonderful medium if it's used properly. But that's the only, the last slide I have. So let's hear your comments. Yeah.
I just have a question. Have there been any studies done that show that, you know, when you watch a moderate amount of television or, you know, limited amount, that it is a restful activity? Like, because I think that's generally why I go to it. Like, because I'm tired at the end of the day, but I'm not sleepy yet. So I want to do something that's sort of restful to kind of wind down my day. And but I wonder, I do the same thing with Facebook. Are those restful activities? You know, I'm guessing not. So anyway, I just wonder what the studies show.
That's a great question. And Monday, I referenced that a little bit in that we tend to think it's a relaxation. You know, it's mindless. It just helps us feel good. But a study I did with another communications professor, and it was 5 measures of psychosocial loneliness, shyness, boredom, self-esteem. And we had 50 people under, I can't remember the numbers actually, but we had numbers under 2 hours a day, under numbers 2 to 4 hours of TV a day, and over 4. And in every measure, those 2 hours and over was detrimental to those things. But up to 2 hours a day, really, I kind of jokingly said it on Monday, isn't going to hurt anybody unless the TV falls on you. But it's kind of how you interpret it. I know if I would get sucked away and do Facebook for 2 hours, I'd be done. I'd go, oh, you know, and that wouldn't be good for my self-esteem. But if you check in, have a favorite show, by all means, you know, that can work. But what happens is it tends to grow into more. Go for it.
Well, just to comment on that, it wasn't just TV, but when my son was 5, he was having night terrors. And if people don't know what those are, it's like nightmares where you're wandering around the house screaming and you're not supposed to wake them up because it actually can be really detrimental. And it was just absolutely awful. And I got the advice of have them stop watching TV and stop feeding him facts at night. He loved factual books. And I quit reading those to him before bed, not in general, and took him off of TV. Mm-hmm. The night terrors stopped it. It never happened again.
And because over 80% of kids have TVs in their bedrooms, you know, that is a big problem.
I remember the first time I saw a kid with a TV in his room, and I was like,
did you want one?
No.
Okay.
I mean,
I thought I would.
Well, I was also one of those kids who never spent any time in his room. I was in my room. Also, like, my siblings are older, so they moved out, it was just me. But I, you know, I slept in there, and that's it. But just blown away the first time I seen TV.
And most people think they're doing the right thing.
Because Comcast tells you that you're supposed to have one in every room of the chair or something.
Well, and I, as I mentioned Monday, when I've addressed groups and that issue comes up, you know, how the agency and, you know, it's the parents that buy the TV, and the parents are complaining, oh, my kid always, but you really bought it for them because you kind of wanted to watch your own show. So it's not a very popular topic to bring up in bigger groups because they feel,
well,
I know I get out of there really fast. They're usually great. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, just one more comment about that same kid, which is that he got totally wound up if he spent any screen time starting when he was about 3 years old. And we actually have a list of things. He was kind of backwards of he could spend 20 minutes on the computer, and then he had to either crochet or he had this list of things he had to do to calm himself down, or else he'd be, I mean, people would want to put him on ADD drugs. He was crazy.
Wow.
But then he could calm himself down and go on.
That's interesting you mention that, because there was a family who had an ADD child, and that's what the pediatrician said, just try no TV for a while.
So that's kind of the opposite of the calming.
Yeah, it's true. It didn't work for them. Yes.
I'm just curious, because I'm of a generation who grew up without a TV, not because my parents made the decision, but because they were just coming into being and they didn't work very well, and why bother? And so have there been any studies about differences between that generation, those of us who go back that far, and kids today who grew up not knowing anything else?
I don't think a study particularly on that topic, but I do know that in my earlier study, that was one of the biggest complaints of, let's say, the generation that are probably 30 to 50 now, is their parents who grew up with television as a good thing. It was introduced, it was opening the world up. The grandparents could not understand why they took it off. These poor kids are going to be so left out of society. And different scenarios, like one young lady said, I remember going to my grandparents' house and my grandpa met me at the door with an armful of videos. And then she was so excited about that. So I don't know if I'm really getting at what you're saying, but there's definitely a mindset in, say, the kind of, I guess, those that might be 70, 80 right now that still feel, hey, this opened our world. You know, it came into being when we were raising our kids, and it was a good thing. And they
along with canned food and,
powdered
formula for babies and all these things that were helpful.
TV dinners.
And they were at the time, but we've just got a different perspective now.
Go ahead.
I grew up with TV. I got a TV when I was five, and I grew up in small town Iowa. And I loved TV. I loved it. I loved the experience of it. And then somewhere along the line when I was in college or after college, I just quit watching it. And I haven't watched it since.
You don't remember why?
I don't really remember why, but I do remember there was a joy in coming to school and being able to talk about the Andy Griffith Show that night. There was something that was really positive about it. And I didn't lose anything. We were outside, we did everything outside. But one thing that came to mind, I have, because of my work schedule for years, I had a sleep disorder. And so I did a lot of research into sleep. And one of the things they said was, and I think it factors into it, that if lights, if you want to work on the quality of your sleep, start dimming your lights down an hour and a half before you go to sleep. The last thing you want to do is to go onto screens before you get up. If you get up in the middle of the night, don't turn a light on. Use your watch or just try to have night lights. But so just the act of watching TV before you go to bed, despite saying anything of the content, very well may be a stimulant that works counter to good sleep patterns or good dreaming or whatever. Because I've found that to be a real profound observation.
Wow.
So anyway, just a thought there about screens and such.
One comment you made about growing up, and I watched Leave It to Beaver, Gilligan's Island, my two favorite shows, and we Sunday night dinners, everybody'd watch it together. Now it's a separate thing, but it's not in any of this research, but in the last 30 years ago, the top 10 TV shows were all sitcoms and comedies, Carol Burnett, Red Skelton, I don't know if any of those names.
Oh, yeah.
They were all uplifting, kind of goofy, fun, family, and the top 10 today are all sci-fi, CSI, Law and Order. Somebody was making that comment, and I go, wow, when did that happen? Where we went from this, I'm just saying the observation of how TV's changed in 30 years. Comment? Did you think I had? No, okay. Yeah.
Can you imagine what?
We also are a more violent society than in the 50s.
No, we're not.
You know, actually,
we have a belief that we're a more violent society, but as we're aging, we are much less violent than we were 20 years ago.
Get the population up, it makes it look like it went down.
Say what?
Run the population up enough, you can make the violent numbers come down.
That's true. You know,
even in that survey.
It always shocks me when I realize that you read statistics and actually certain levels of crime have fallen quite a bit. And yet, as I mentioned again on Monday, a very reputable survey done, it's been several years ago now, showed that media paints television 100 times more violent than it is. So we sure think it is. But it is an interesting statistic, because it's not really.
I don't know, maybe this statistics come to this, but certainly through the 50s and 60s, the society was not make my day, draw the gun. But that is what I see, and we see it nationally. We're talking about, if we aren't in war, we're talking about the possibility of being in war. The gun deaths, the shootings, the road rage. Are statistics countering that to me? I mean, have I got the wrong impression?
I think we all do. I think we all think things have terribly increased. And when you look at increases of violent crime or increases of homicides or increases of, gun deaths, and, it's not as bad as it's portrayed to be. I mean, that would have been a great thing. Maybe I'll try to do that for tomorrow, to bring up some, what those currently are, because I get that question, and the idea that media paints it so violent, it's not as bad as we think in the last 30 years, is something I'll try to get that.
I think is something, though, in the way that we treat each other. In our public discourse and the way we, it seems to me that over my lifetime, I'm 54 next week, and it seems like we've changed, we aren't able to dialogue as much. It's not a matter of, we disagree or agree to disagree. Or I'm right and you're wrong. It's I'm right and you're evil. And in that way, I do think we are more violent. I don't know if that makes
sense. The word violent is a little hard to.
Right, because statistics are interesting, because even if the physical violence has not increased, which I think is probably true, because I think we just didn't talk about a lot of violence that happened 20 or 30 years ago, particularly in the home or behind closed doors or things like that, but I do believe that it's almost like bringing that physical violence out into the open.
Well, bullying is a great example. Cyberbullying, for sure. Lack of respect for relationships, for authority. Absolutely. Yeah. That would have skyrocketed in the last 30 years, I'm sure. And especially the
statistics.
What I was going to say,
they think it's pretty much related to the fact that we're an aging population. Your most violent group is, of course, the young ones.
We used to fight, and fighting was kind of fun, and that was something kind of maybe was a recreational activity for the evening that you were headed into. We never shot at each other, and we would go ahead and fight, and then nobody ever. I remember one parking lot situation where tire irons and things were coming, and I had a trunk full of guns, and the last thing I wanted was my trunk open. That was not something that was going to make this situation any better.
I grew up with, I can't touch somebody, I'm going to have handcuffs.
Yeah.
You can't touch someone in public anymore. That is the society in which we live. But I feel like back to previous comments, I've got a crazy perspective here. The 24-hour news cycle has raised the anxiety level of our society so much we cannot even measure it. Living in the sticks and then moving to the city, I saw a huge difference in the way teeth are treated. For one thing that I picked up on, when you're kind of like this, teeth aren't very disposable in this environment. When you live in a city of over 5 million people, teeth are very disposable. I don't like you, I'll find new friends. And now that everyone's got, the internet and Facebook in their pocket, they live in a city in their head. you know, they've got, you know, 2,000 friends in their pockets. They can chat with at any moment. So it doesn't matter about those other people. Like, for them, like, and they're the center of that universe, so that's awesome.
Actually, on Monday, Craig, there was a slide that was Atlantic just last year. A big site is Facebook making you more lonely, and there were some of the most
absolutely
sad stories about loneliness where people thought they had 5,000 friends, and they really didn't.
And because we talked about this in high school, because I grew up with, you know, watching people get phones when they got their license because I'm 26. And now it's, I remember, you know, the first time I saw a kid with a phone was at a baseball game. And, you know, I was like, what are you doing with that?
There's, you know, a game like, going on here.
So I've seen a lot of, and I remember the texting, because we would text each other too, like, hey, don't text me, call me. If you have something to say, I want to hear your voice. And that, so, like, you know, and overnight it was, well, I guess we don't have to talk anymore because now we have texting.
Oh, thank God for emoticons. That way I know what I'm thinking.
Well, back to your point, Craig, about anxiety 24/7. And I go right back to Becky's beautiful talk Sunday night about it's just, that's kind of the way society wants us to just ramp us up more and more and more. And we're looking for some kind of refuge. And I have to say, I don't know if we'll get much chance to talk about this second point here, but I don't know if you realize what a refuge you offer here that is so different. And there are places in society, interesting places, that are making these baby steps towards very radical decisions. There's some coffee shops in the Chicago area that decided to have no screen policy. They're not talking no Wi-Fi, they're talking no screen policy, which was, whoa, you know, are you kidding? I mean, there's a very popular one in Spokane that's always been no Wi-Fi. And you just find these people are making these steps, they're very different, but they're very popular.
They're intentional.
Yes, they're intentional, exactly. And you're finding people, they might grumble because it's cool to grumble, but they get here and go, thank goodness. I mean, I shut off everything. I didn't even know staff could have access to it. And I found out I hadn't given an emergency number to my brother, and my dad's kind of, you know. So I did have to send one. And when it was done, I said, oh, I didn't want to do anything. I was looking forward to that. But long-term staff, totally, I'm sure you've got different issues. But for us one-weekers, I hope you keep that policy.
Well, let's see, for me, I can't communicate with the outside world, and there are some things I need to do. I need to deal with prescriptions, I need to deal with doctors, I need to deal with the bank, paying bills, you know, different kinds of things that this internet society allows me to do because there are no phones here.
Oh, I know there are so many issues, I don't have a clue, but it's just, like I've said, for the short timers, go ahead.
I don't know, on the other side of it, you know, when I would tell people that we were coming up here for a year, my daughter and I, and she'll be in high school, you know, they're always like, well, how does your daughter feel about that? And I was like, well, I let her make her own decision. So it's really, people seem really shocked that my daughter would actually choose to come up here. But she's been coming up her whole life, and it's about her favorite place in the world. Wow. So,
when we leave, she'll get a pony.
Yes,
Kari. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that when Holden goes back to regular guests, I think it's going to be really pivotal for us to go back to what you were saying a while ago, to figure out how to, I mean, if we decide to have a no-screen policy again for public spaces and that kind of thing, to choose how we communicate that new policy. Like, if we just lay it down as this rule of, you know, we're choosing no screens because it's evil, and you were saying, Cindy, like, that's not going to come across very well.
No, not at all. Yeah.
But I wonder if, you know, that you were saying, like, there are ways for kids to, like, you know, why don't you shut it off and, like, think about it and do these activities instead. You know, I think that'll be really important for me.
And that's kind of what tomorrow's about, is reducing. You know, we don't want to be the kill your TV. We don't want to be so against it, because that just says the wrong message. But there will be some things tomorrow that might actually be able to factor into some programming ideas. You guys do have, I'm just now realizing that that could be helpful. But yeah, good point.
It's not, it's not what, it's not what you're, what you're missing out on, it's what you're getting instead of. That's what got to be the focus.
Exactly. And even Michael's last lecture, we're talking about emptying out. You know, we all know the importance of emptying out, so something else can maybe fill in. And, you know, you just need to make those intentional choices, and you have to make sometimes intentional rules, because people just won't do it on their own. We'd like to say, oh, people coming up here, they already know, they're not going to do it, but it's going to just kind of, you know, it does. But, yeah.
So, executive directors currently, and I would just like this body to know that the board, of which serves one member, has a task force that's looking ahead at technology and trying to think about the issues that might be coming up. And it's, I think I want to clarify that it's real easy right now to say, oh, mind remediation has really clouded our vision on technology, but actually, technology is clouding our vision on technology. It is moving so fast. It is incorporated into so many people's lives. It was at one point, I mean, we've been here and watched internet come into the village for safety, for business, and for staff needs such as bills, telling mom you're okay, making a plane ticket reservation, which you used to have to go to Stehekin to do, or Dom to Chelan, you know. And the same footprint of that isn't great. But it is going to be a mess, and we're gladly not going to be a part of that conversation. Pass it on to whoever gets to.
Oh, you're terrible.
It's really messy, because it is incorporated into people's lives. What do you say when, instead of bringing 10 books on the boat that you're going to read while you're at Holden, you bring one Kindle? You know, what's bad about that? It's saving paper, it's saving, you know, so what? How are we going to... And all your pictures are digital, and so when you're doing your pictures, you've got a computer screen, you know. Or people sit into Bible study with their Bible pulled up on their phone. I mean, it is really confusing, and yes, there is no black and white answer in my vision, but I do think I'm thankful for the board spending time and setting up, or looking ahead at setting some sort of ideology policy to try. And I don't know if it's going to... You know, otherwise Holden is unbounded, clashing, hitting, moving so fast.
And just becoming like all the other wonderful camps.
Yeah, and
you know, I mean, there's some things that you know, the coffee shop that made a radical policy, boy, you know, that, those are the type of things I hope your board looks into.
Our mission
who's
is
doing things.
All are welcome, though. So
yeah,
computer screen addicted people are welcome here. So I just don't know how to...
No, I was going to say something.
Okay, good.
Just one thing that I've been thinking about, or that came to mind, one of the most shocking things I heard about screens or being online was when Mark and I took a wilderness first responder research class, and so you're with a bunch of people who are taking groups of people out into the wilderness, and one woman took, I think it was like junior hires out, and she didn't allow any devices, and so these kids just freaked out the first couple of days, and they said basically that unless they could post their experience, it wasn't really an experience. It was the posting of it that meant something and validated it. But then, you know, as the time went on, they would actually then learn to appreciate the experience. But it was shocking to me that, you know, the posting of something was such a part of their life.
My husband and I have talked about that a lot. That's just the mentality. If you went on vacation and couldn't tell anybody, would you do it?
Yes!
Absolutely!
I didn't tell parents until we got home.
Or I've had students who had a rule. tell their parents for 2 years after they did it, some of the things they did. Anyway.
I still wish my kids hadn't told them an example.
Could I, Nancy, would you mind just that one little story you told me before here about what movie time used to be here? Maybe we'll
just back in the 80s when there were no VCRs or anything here, every other Saturday night was movie night in the village. And so it was reel-to-reel movies. You'd get the cheapest one, which was like Sinbad's Seventh Voyage or something like that. And every single person in the village came because that was the movie for the next 2 weeks.
And you said they even waited for the person.
And so the ice cream, you know, everybody went and got ice cream, and you didn't start the movie until the person who was selling the ice cream was here, because that meant everybody was here. And then you'd watch this ridiculous movie and talk about it or mock it or imitate it for the next 2 weeks until the next cheap movie. But it was, I mean, I just remember the 80s, it was such a...
That was similar just 10 years ago. I mean, what happened in the village, the first access was up here in the computer room for people to come and email mom or do their bills or do whatever, and then it went Wi-Fi in the village, and this, it changed. People sit in their rooms, they do Facebook, they Facebook each other in the village, you're like, whoa, you know, like right next door, comes in hot. And, you know, watching movies in your little niches.
Yeah,
it VCRs. Just has changed.
And that's what happened with the ACRs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, now it's pretty basic technology as VCRs. Yeah. It was actually one of the directors that brought in the first VCR, and it soon spread. Yeah. And then the big difference was everybody was going off in smaller groups, and it's not like that's a...
It's not,
I mean, movies are great.
Evil,
I love movies.
But
they really change the community dynamic.
The community aspect of it is a phenomenal aspect that you want to try to regain and not lose. Another, go ahead.
Just
and then I hate to keep you. You can stand up and leave if you want, but I'm happy to...
As a mom who's brought my kids up here their whole lives, they never missed screen time. They always had enough to do. They were never bored. They never complained, even after they had started watching TV and screen stuff at home. I think Holden already provides what kids need in order to not be on screens. That, you know, the pool hall, anyway, I think there's already here what they need. My kids didn't have any problem with it. And my son is now addicted to video games, but when he was here, he really had no problem.
Yeah.
Bring him up for an intervention.
Well, I think the closing, you know, if I had to summarize it, it's going to be those intentional choices that you make, sometimes not popular choices, but intentional because of what the vision of your whole group is what needs to drive everything. And it's wonderful that there's a task force looking at it. And I have no doubt that it'll be the right decision for Holden. But it is interesting to find a place like this that is quite different from any other family camp I've ever been at. And you cherish some of those things. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So again, thank you for
coming.